On this episode of the Concast, we discuss all things Osgood-Slaughter's syndrome. And happy Friday. My name is Connor Collins. I am a registered massage therapist and sports injury therapist practicing 45 minutes outside of Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. And welcome to the Concast, episode 38, a podcast where we discuss all things health, wellness, and injuries in a better attempt to understand the human body. For episode 38, we're going to discuss an injury that's very, very common in adolescence as they age, and that is something known as Osgood-Slaughter's syndrome or Osgood-Slaughter's disease. First and foremost, I don't love the title of syndrome or disease here, mainly because this is just a process that some people go through during growth spurts that can be a little bit painful and uncomfortable during that time, or substantially painful or uncomfortable during that time. But usually after growing and going through growth spurt, this particular condition doesn't cause any further complications down the line in 99.9% of the population. So I think characterizing this as a disease or a syndrome, I think we might want to get away from that verbiage. However, everything seems to need a diagnosis and a title, or we're searching for a diagnosis and a title. And so that's how I'll refer to it for the rest of the podcast. So like I said, this is present in adolescence. As both males and females are going through puberty and going through a growth spurt, often the growth plates or areas of bone that have not yet fused are going through a lot of stress. And depending upon the individual and a particular growth plate in question, sometimes these growth plates don't close until around the age of 20, so everybody's a little bit variable in that respect. This condition is twice as more likely to develop in young males as opposed to females, and is essentially pain and inflammatory response going on in an area in the body known as the tibial tuberosity. And the tibial tuberosity is just at an area below the kneecap, where there's this little bump that sticks out at an area known as the proximal portion of the tibia. So that is about 1 to 1.5 thumb widths, just below the lowest part of your kneecap. And that's an area where you have this ligament known as the patellar ligament that attaches there. And a lot of your muscles in the front of your leg, your quadriceps, are using that as a pulley system to help extend your knee and create force through the knee. Now, as children go through a growth spurt, what happens is the long bones in the leg grow more rapidly than the soft tissue. So the femur, the upper leg bone, as well as the tibia and the fibula, the lower leg bones, grow quite quickly. And in certain adolescents, what that will create is it will create an excessive amount of tone or pull in the soft tissues of the leg, not only the quadriceps at the front of the leg, but some of the other muscles. For whatever reason, in certain people, and maybe it's because they're going through a growth spurt a little bit more quickly, they can't adapt. And this might be also due to the volume of sports that they're playing during their growth spurt. We do see this substantially more in children that are active. What happens at the growth plate is as these muscles are increasing in tone and creating a pull at the growth plate, it increases the activity of a cell known as the chondrocyte. So what happens to the chondrocyte is it becomes overactive and it will start to lay down tissue. And this is what is responsible for this appearance of a bump forming, as well as it will create excessive stress and friction there, which can cause an inflammatory response, sensitize some of the nerves in the area, create some soft tissue change, and create pain and discomfort. Now, the bump that's present in many cases of Osgood-Slaughter's does not necessarily need to be there to get the diagnosis, but is often present. Mainly because what happens is the adolescent will start to get pain and discomfort, and they'll try and manage it at home. Sometimes they'll get a little bit of treatment, and they'll continue their activities. And as they continue their activities in their growth spurt, the chondrocytes continue to lay down cells, and then eventually this bump starts to form. Now, you can get this condition in a variety of different stages. The first stage is known as a tibial apophysitis, and that just means that there's inflammation at this growth plate, mainly due to friction and the stress. However, there's not that visible bump that's present. So when you push in and around the area of the tibial tuberosity, which is always, there's always a little bit of a bump there because it is an anatomical landmark. But when you push in and around that area, it will be painful, but it won't be visibly changed compared to the other leg. You can then also get the condition at a stage known as an osteochondrosis, which is after a tibial apophysitis. And what happens in an osteochondrosis, osis means the tissue starts to change in quality. So these chondrocytes have now laid down the tissue. And ultimately what will happen is that bump may go down a little bit after puberty is done, but there'll always be a little bit of a remnants of a bump there for the rest of your life. And that's primarily due to the fact that once the growth plate closes, those chondrocytes, which are cartilage, would then fuse and become osseous or become a bone. One of the other things that we always want to try and make sure has been ruled out in cases wherever we see bumps on the body that weren't there before are things like, in the case of an Osgood-Schlatter's condition, something known as an osteochondroma. And an osteochondroma is a benign tumor, so a non-cancerous bony tumor that can sometimes happen in the area in and around the knee. And so it's important to make sure that that's been ruled out as well. Often what will happen with an osteochondroma is it will continue to grow past a little bump and become something very substantial. These type of tumors obviously should be examined properly by a medical doctor, and from my understanding, become problematic when they grow to encroach or push on other tissues. This might be adjoining nerves or joints. Otherwise, generally, these don't pose any problems and are incredibly rare. So this is why it's important that all of the conditions that we are suffering from, whether it be pain, dysfunction, numbness, and tingling, do need to be investigated by an appropriate medical practitioner. And please don't be taking anything that I say in the podcast as medical advice. This is just food for thought, and anything that you're suffering from or your family or your children are suffering from does need to be evaluated by a medical professional. Now, for those therapists that are listening, there are rule outs that I will consider for an Osgood-Schlatter's condition. The first is Sinding-Larsen-Johansson syndrome. And this is essentially the same thing happening for the same reason that I just reviewed, but instead of at the tibial tuberosity, it's in an area known as the inferior growth plate or inferior growth pole of the patella or the apex of the patella. And if you remember, the patella is a triangular shaped bone where the apex or the tip of the triangle is pointing down towards the feet. So instead of pain and complaints primarily at the tibial tuberosity, the pain and complaint will be at the inferior pole of the patella. And this is essentially managed very similarly to Osgood-Schlatter's, the condition. The second thing that you want to rule out that can often be a comorbidity or present with Osgood-Schlatter's, the condition, is a patellar tendinopathy or tendinosis. This is typically characterized by pain and tenderness on palpation through the patellar ligament or patellar tendon, which is the piece of soft tissue that's running between the apex or tip of the kneecap as well as the tibial tuberosity. Another condition, if the adolescent is having pain on either side of the patellar tendon, is something known as Hoffa's fat pad syndrome, where there's a fat pad or piece of fat between the tibia as well as the patellar tendon, and that can get irritated due to excessive friction as well. That may be the primary pain generator at that time due to localized inflammation. The other thing that can happen is a comorbid situation, which means there are a number of different things going on at once, and it's very common for the patellar tendon to be irritated as a secondary cause of Osgood-Schlatter's, the condition. So it's important to try and bear that in mind, that there may just not be one thing going on, it may be multiple structures involved. Some of the other things that might be present might be simply irritation to the kneecap, or what used to be characterized as patellofemoral pain syndrome. This is typically a duller, diffuse pain with no specific recreation of symptoms on palpation. Sometimes pushing on the kneecap down towards the table or down towards the floor, if you're assessing them, will cause some discomfort. And then lastly, but certainly not least, one of the things that I always keep in the back of my head is anytime you get stress at a growth plate in an adolescent or a child that's growing with high volume activity and exercise and very little rest, there is the potential for stress fractures to occur at the growth plate because it is a very vulnerable part of the body. So if the pain is 9 to 10 out of 10, the patient is reluctant to weight bear, or they're coming in not weight bearing, they're really getting no resolution of their symptoms or discomfort, they're getting night pain, sharp pain with periods of dull, achy pain, then I'm certainly going to refer back to the family doctor for further evaluation and hope that a stress fracture or a stress reaction can be ruled out. Now, in saying all this, it may be something completely different that's going on with the knee, and that's why you want to try and figure out what the mechanism of injury was. So if there was something really specific that went on, then I have a tendency to leave Osgood-Schlatter's, the condition, as the last thing that I want to evaluate. So if they came in and they had a plant and twist injury, or they had a slip and fall, then there's some sort of mechanism of injury there that I want to evaluate the ligaments and some of the passive structures of the knee to make sure that those are okay. Often with an Osgood-Schlatter's condition, there isn't necessarily a mechanism of injury. The adolescent comes in, they are typically active and they've been playing sports and their knees started to hurt. They can't pinpoint something specific that they've done to create some of their aggravation. When they present in the clinic, I find typically that the symptoms are pain on palpation or touching that tibial tuberosity. There may be a visible bump that is present on the tibia, depending upon, again, at what stage you find the condition. They're typically complaining of pain before, during, and or after activity. And again, this depends upon how long it's been going on for, as well as whether they've been getting management for the condition so far. There's often a complaint of tightness or increased feeling of tone in the front of the leg or the quadriceps area. And this condition seems to be aggravated predominantly by knee dominant activities. So squatting, bending forward, you're in a volleyball stance about to receive the ball, you're taking a basketball shot. The thing about adolescence that we have to remember is adolescents are neurologically immature. And often what that will create is knee dominance over hip dominance. And hip dominance is often very difficult to rehabilitate in an adolescent because of their neurological immaturity. And what that means is we can try and coach and rehabilitate sound technique, but there is the nervous system that has to dictate and help coordinate that. So if I'm trying to, for example, teach somebody proper squat mechanics and they're caving in at the knees, they're not sitting back into their bum, what I have to recognize is some of that may be driven by the nervous system. And I can try and coach that. And until the adolescent becomes a little bit older and the nervous system starts to mature, sometimes I might not get the outcome that I'm looking for. And I have to recognize that based on where the adolescent is in their stage of maturity. So that's one of the reasons why this condition happens in the first place, is children and adolescents are generally more knee dominant in their movement patterns than adults that are aware of their knee dominance and can work around it with exercise and coaching and rehabilitation, because they're a little bit more body aware. And that doesn't mean to say that all adults are body aware, but they have a more attuned, mature nervous system, and so they have more opportunity to be aware of their movement and their movement patterns than children do. So once the adolescent or child has the diagnosis, how is this condition typically managed? And to be honest with you, I find this quite difficult to manage. And this is for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, the child is typically an athlete. They're typically a high volume athlete. So these are children or adolescents that are in sport or multiple sports, and they're usually training, playing, or practicing, in my experience, at minimum 5 days a week, but sometimes 6 or 7 days a week. So their rest and recovery time is essentially zero, and the volume of training is high, and then they're going through this growth spurt on top of it. So the first conversation I usually like to have is that going to change? Is there a way that we can augment volume temporarily? Is there a way that we can change the ability for there to be more rest through maybe reducing practice time to some degree? And usually 99 times out of 100, the answer to that is no. For whatever reason, and I don't really get into the specifics, but it's also important for children to do things that they enjoy. So if they enjoy playing sport and that's something that they're really passionate about and they're unwilling to reduce some of that volume, then I have to respect that decision. So my role becomes trying to address some of the symptoms. Now, how do I do that? The first thing is I instruct them to do regular soft tissue work at home. So high frequency, trying to reduce some of the tone in the front of the leg. This is done through typically a self-myofascial release or foam rolling routine that I give them to try and augment some of the tissue quality. My hopes there is that that's relieving some of the tension and the pull on the growth plate and maybe reducing some of the symptoms. To be honest, I've found this to be moderate at best at reducing overall symptoms. The next is bracing. Typically, I will suggest a patellar band or a patellar strap that's often used for patellar tendinopathy or tendinosis. This is just a little strap that goes around the knee in between the tibial tuberosity or that bump and the apex or bottom of the patella. And I find that this is the most beneficial intervention in that it will change the sensation in the area. It will give the athlete a feeling of comfort. It will allow them often to continue doing their activities either completely pain-free or substantially reduced. And for whatever reason, I found this intervention to be the best. So I will recommend that right off the bat. The thing about this condition is it is quite common to be chronic until the adolescent goes through and gets out of the other side of their growth spurt. And so often I'll have that conversation with the parents that this is really common to be aggravated for a period of time while they go through the growth spurt. And upon coming out of the other end, a lot of the time these symptoms will reduce. If they go through another growth spurt, there is the potential that this might come back. In my experience, this is typically only unilateral, which is also interesting. It does always make me question that if this was truly caused by the growth plate, then why is it only aggravating one leg? But I haven't really found a way around that in the years that I've been treating it. If none of these interventions work, medical interventions are used. These are typically in the forms of medication or injections. Injections into the growth plate should always be managed mindfully and probably a last resort, especially if steroids are being used, as we know that multiple steroid injections into areas of growth plate or soft tissue in a short period of time can have more negative consequences than positive consequences. So while these are used as a last resort, they are often used or in conjunction with other injections, things like PRP, where platelets are taken and spun around and re-injected into the area, or prolotherapy, where an irritant, typically sugar or salt, is injected into the area with the thought process of kickstarting the healing of that soft tissue in the area and subsequently reducing symptoms and tone. Now, even though I find that this condition is really difficult to manage, I still will give them some at-home rehabilitation or exercise to go along with that foam rolling routine. This is typically in the form of very simple hip dominant strengthening, stuff that isn't going to require the nervous system to be as heightened as some of the activities I might give in somebody that's a little bit older. So this might be hip bridge variations just to try and increase some of the ability to control the hips a little bit better. I'll put them in a half kneeling pattern as long as it's comfortable and have them go through some holding positions in that sort of hip flexor stretch, quote unquote, position. Sometimes I'll go through some gentle dynamic stretching of the hip flexor to try and help reduce some of the tone there. I'll work on stability in half kneeling, so I might just get them to hold that position and I'll apply some external force by pushing on them. If it's comfortable, I might take them through a rear lunge pattern, so have them step back, which is going to load that rear chain a little bit more as long as they're pushing through the heel and help give balance between the quadriceps, the front of the leg, and the hamstrings, the back of the leg. To be honest, I find that it's seldom that I can do this. But my primary goal is, again, to reduce some of the tone in the front of the leg, which is done through that regular self-massage. And then putting them in a half-kneeling position, having them do a variety of things to try and help reduce the tone in the front of the leg, and then giving them some very simple hip dominance. I've still found that the primary intervention that works best for me is the at-home self-massage, as well as that brace to try and augment some of the symptoms, as well as having a discussion around the volume of activity that athlete is going through, as well as the fact that once they're done their growth spurt, many or all of these symptoms are going to dissipate substantially. But yes, in my experience, this is definitely one of the more difficult things to treat. My question for you is, if you're a therapist, have you found other interventions that have worked for you if you've treated a lot of this over the years? If you're a parent and your child or adolescent has had this, are there things that you've done to help benefit it over the years? Feel free to leave it in the comment section below. As always, I hope that you found this podcast episode to be valuable for you. Have a great weekend, folks, and we'll see you in the next one.